We want to switch gears now to spend a few minutes today on one aspect of what's being called the do-it-yourself movement in medicine. People with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, who say they don't have time to wait for an FDA-approved cure, are cooking up drug therapies on their own and sharing that information online. ALS affects about 30,000 Americans. It causes cell damage in the brain and spinal cord. It gradually robs people of the ability to move or even breathe. It's insidious. The average life expectancy is 2 to 5 years after diagnosis. Amy Marcus of The Wall Street Journal recently wrote about this do-it-yourself movement in the ALS community. Amy, we spoke with ALS sufferer Corey Reach a while back, and he told us his biggest frustration is that companies either don't want to invest in an ALS drug trial because of the short lifespan of patients, or when companies do have trials, he can't qualify. You heard that, too. Many patients not qualifying for trials because they're too far along in their disease.
And then for other people who do qualify for the trials, it takes a long time to get the results. And many of them get frustrated because they need something urgently right now.
Time is something they don't have. So they are, you know, making their own. Now, this isn't something that where they're just whipping up something on their own in their kitchens. They are looking at a trial that's being run by Neuraltis Pharmaceuticals in Palo Alto, California. Tell us about this.
Many of these patients follow ALS news very, very carefully. They watch for press releases by companies who have compounds that are coming out. In this case, they saw a press release issued by this company that there was going to be a drug trial, and they set out to do research to figure out what exactly the compound was. They looked at documents that they could get their hands on. They went to webinars that the company's CEO gave. They shared data online with each other, including patients who ultimately enrolled in the trial. And they came to the conclusion that it was a particular compound that they could get their hands on in a raw form.
Neuraltis Pharmaceuticals is calling the compound they're running a trial on NP001.
Correct. So no one knows exactly what's in it because they've obviously done some work to it. But after their research, they came to the conclusion that a large component of it was likely sodium chloride, which is a compound that's used in a number of different ways and different forms, including in municipal water sewage systems, including as bleach. And it's available online.
And you found ALS patients who have obtained it and are injecting themselves?
Some patients are drinking it. They're mixing it with water and trying to drink it. And other people are having it injected.
Look, people have commented on this. ALS Therapy Development Institute here in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is the only company that's focused exclusively, solely on finding a cure for ALS, was quoted in your story as saying people have the right to do whatever they want. However, maybe they should be doing it with doctors and researchers. Is there a concern about just taking this, what is it called again? This
sodium chloride.
Sodium chloride, just drinking it or injecting it?
Well, of course there's a concern because no one knows for certain what changes the company has made to the compound. No one knows how it's being made in the places that they're buying it, whether they're mixing it in a way or infusing it in a way that's sterile and good for them. So, of course, there's concern. The patients argue that they're taking precautions, that they're doing their research, that they're taking doses that are lower than doses that are being used in the trial, that they're monitoring themselves. But of course, there's always a potential that they're going to harm themselves and potentially accelerate their disease.
On the other hand, what have the patients who have injected themselves with sodium chloride said to you? Do any of them feel that there's an improvement?
Yes. One of the people I interviewed said that he noticed an improvement in swallowing, and that's a very important change in terms of quality of life. Of course, he can't be certain it's tied to the drug. The disease goes up and down. People have good days and bad days. So that's sort of the dilemma that the patients themselves face. They're collecting data as well as they can. They hope to analyze it, and they hope to discuss it in a kind of public way with doctors, clinicians, other patients. But no one can be sure if it's having a beneficial effect, just as no one in a drug trial can be sure if something's having a beneficial effect until they unblind it and do the analysis.
Right, because you're not even sure in a drug trial if you've got the drug or the placebo.
You don't know. Yeah. And the whole point of a drug trial, the whole driving question behind a drug trial is they're telling you, we don't know for sure whether this is going to have a beneficial effect. And that's why we're running a drug trial. We need to test that idea.
Well, you spoke to ALS sufferers who started websites and are collecting some of this information. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, one of them started a website where he's trying specifically to collect data on patients who are taking sodium chloride. But there's a website that's already been established that's part of a company called Patients Like Me that has a huge number of ALS patients who share data online, all kinds of data, not just about sodium chloride.
And Eric Valor is the ALS patient who has started his own website to collect data on the use of sodium chloride. What does he say? I mean, I'm just so struck by the time element here. Somebody has only 4, 5, 6 years and they're starting a website and they're trying to collect data and they're injecting themselves and they're doing all of this with the clock ticking.
Yeah, the clock is ticking for patients. And I think that everyone recognizes that ALS is a lethal disease, that it can have a very rapid course. Eric, in our exchange, and he wasn't able to speak with me, we had to conduct our interview via email. He's on a ventilator. He did write to me and say, every day is precious to me. I don't want to do something that will take even one day away from myself. I am not trying to harm myself. What I'm trying to do is buy time in the hopes that there will be drugs that come onto the market and are developed that will help him stay alive.
What is the sense in the medical community about the ethics of this? I mean, is there a thinking that this is such a unique community of patients because of the time element that, I don't know, maybe it's, a little bit more okay that they have this ad hoc research set up than it would be for other communities?
I think the doctors that I spoke with, they weren't critical of the patients because they understand what's driving the patient's desire to do this. But they're concerned that the patients not harm themselves. And I think their preference would be that there needs to be some new way of collecting data so that no one's hurting themselves and also that the data that they're generating isn't lost and is collected in the most rigorous manner possible so that other patients may benefit.
Sort of a set of more formalized and regulated ad hoc trials running alongside the company's research trials.
It's going to require some outside-the-box thinking. But now that do-it-yourself science is here to stay, now that people are able to organize on the internet,
Sure. Set
up websites, collect data, the doctors I spoke to says that it would make sense to try to think outside the box, you know, with ways of collecting this data and ultimately using it to benefit drug research and patients' health.
That's Amy Marcus of The Wall Street Journal. Amy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Welcome back to our look at how people with ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease, have taken to brewing their own drugs rather than waiting for clinical trials. Ben Harris is a 45-year-old medical physicist from Bloomington, Indiana, who was diagnosed with ALS last year. He took part in the drug company Neuraltis's clinical trial for NP001. It's based on sodium chloride. When that trial ended, Ben joined other ALS patients who are injecting themselves with the compound. Now, Ben has trouble speaking, and so our producer, Kevin Sullivan, spent an afternoon talking with him online. We've asked our colleague, Steph Katsonitz, to read back with Kevin the transcript of what ended up being two guys, one with a fatal illness, shooting the breeze.
Can you start by describing what your condition's like now? For example, you can obviously type, but what are your physical limitations?
At this point, I'm at the tail end of being able to communicate verbally and being able to eat. I'd say in a few months I won't be able to utter a word, and I'll need to have a feeding tube placed. All my muscles are affected. Walking is slow, and climbing stairs is getting a little challenging. I have to exercise caution. One might not even be able to tell by observing me that there's anything wrong in those areas other than speech, but it takes a great deal of effort to appear normal.
After the Neuraltis clinical trial for NP001 ended, you started taking sodium chloride on your own, injecting yourself with it. Are you still doing that, and do you think it's been effective?
Yeah, I am still doing the injections. Although the positive effect of sodium chloride did begin to wear off near the end of the NP001 trial, and it seems to have little effect now, other than a possible slowing of my disease, I did have one hint that it may still be helping. About 1 month ago, after one of my self-infusions, my swallowing improved, just as it had done in the beginning of the study. That lasted for about 1 week and then faded. I was just about to give up on it, but this event has made me even more determined to stick with it as long as I am able.
Do you think there's a possibility you could be chasing ghosts by taking the sodium chloride, maybe hoping for something that might not even be there?
Certainly. However, sodium chloride is different from any other substance tested for ALS, either formally or informally, in that it has actually improved the status of those who took it, if only temporarily. Nothing has ever done that.
You're sharing the results of taking sodium chloride by taking part in an ad hoc study, where you share your information on a website called Patients Like Me. How do you hope that information is going to be used? And do you feel that the analysis could end up helping you?
I understand that the likelihood of one of these ad hoc studies leading to a significant discovery is low. But that's only half the point. It is a horrible feeling thinking about the hundreds of substances out there and wondering whether one of them helps, but you are missing out. My hope is that the information will ultimately be analyzed by the mathematicians at Patients Like Me. It will be admittedly noisy data, but mathematical algorithms have become sophisticated to the point that they can filter out much of this noise. I do hope that I hit pay dirt with one of these trials, but the chance of this happening is unlikely. However, my actions today may help the 44-year-old male with a wonderful family and nothing but good things to look forward to who gets this diagnosis next year or next decade.
But, you know, when the Wall Street Journal reported on this do-it-yourself movement to treat ALS, they spoke to doctors and researchers who said, one concern is that no one really knows for certain what changes Neurolytus, that's the company doing the NP001 clinical trial, what changes they've made to the sodium chloride. So you might not even be taking the same thing that's being administered under the clinical trial.
These are very valid concerns, but what makes this kind of statement difficult to listen to without eliciting a strong negative reaction from me is that none of these doctors or researchers has taken the time to read our discussion threads or join the conversation. If they had, they would understand that although Neuraltis has not publicly stated what is in NP001, we have figured it out. And if any of these doctors or researchers would take the time to read the discussion forums and follow the paper trail that we have uncovered, they would agree. The offhand skeptical remark that we don't know what NP001 is made out of sheer laziness. What is equally offensive is the implication that because we are mere patients, we are incapable of understanding the science or biology surrounding this or any drug. We are a group of extremely well-educated, careful, and determined people who have collectively spent thousands of hours poring over academic journals and patent applications.
Well, what about your family? How do they feel about you trying these treatments on your own? Or do they trust you because you're a medical physicist and you have an area of expertise that other people with ALS don't?
I think my background does help immensely. I understand the science behind these things, I understand the mathematics of the chances, and I am not blinded by hope. As for my wife, she trusts me and pretty much leaves the decision on what to try up to me. She sees me spending literally hundreds of hours researching these things and knows that unless I felt they were safe, I wouldn't do them. From the outside, it seems like a reckless endeavor, but on the contrary, these are very well-educated guesses. I have a son who's 7, and he's completely unaware of what I'm trying.
Well, that makes me think. You say you spend literally hundreds of hours researching these things and doing work on this. And I wonder, how much longer do you plan on doing this? Because it sounds like you're spending a lot of time and energy researching and working on treatments. But are you maybe giving up something else on the other end, like the limited time that you have with your family?
That's a great question. Actually, the instant I was diagnosed, I changed my lifestyle to spend more time with my family. Prior to my diagnosis, I traveled extensively for my job, spending as much as a month on the road at a time. I missed the majority of my son's childhood from age 2 to 5, some of the most precious years of his childhood. That I did merely to earn a paycheck, not to save my life. I'm still working full-time, but I no longer travel, and as soon as the clock strikes 5, I close my laptop and stop working and put work out of my mind. I devote every minute of the evening to my wife and son. I'm a night owl, so as soon as they go to bed, I dive into the DIY research again. I plan to do this until I'm no longer physically able to take care of myself. When I reach the point where I can no longer walk or move my hands, it's pretty much game over.
Ben, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us, and take care and the best of luck to you and your family.
Thank you.